You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning, everybody in the tri-state. Glad you're back listening to Radio Rehab. I just found out from Allison, our producer here at WEOA, that there is a Facebook page now up for Radio Rehab. So you can go to Facebook Radio Rehab, and if you have questions, comments, or just want to be a friend, welcome to that. Thanks, Allison, for doing that. Today I have a guest that I want to get right to hearing his story, because Jeffrey is one of the first men that I interviewed when we started the Radio Rehab show. When Mr. Landers asked us to start this, his goal was to offer some insights and advice and some direction to people in the community that have addictive disorders or mental health issues. So I start going out interviewing people, and I was enjoying getting to know people. Well, Jeffrey invited us to interview him in prison. And I had never been inside of a prison, Wabash Prison, so I was a little skeptical, didn't know what to expect, but was curious, and went to Wabash Prison and met Jeffrey, and we shook hands and looked at each other, and you know, it says it in the rooms of the 12-step programs, you just know when you look in somebody's eyes, there's that language of the heart. And I saw in Jeffrey integrity, respect, but also the woundedness of what his addiction had cost him, where he had ended up in prison with wires around his new home, with no sense of when he was going to get out of there. But I was impressed in interviewing him. I learned a lot and realized the only difference between me and Jeffrey was that he got caught. And he was candid about his story, and he will just be very impressed with where Jeffrey's come. He started out with good values and good family, and the addiction just turned everything upside down very quickly. So I'm proud to have him back. He's been a free man, got out of Wabash, and has dedicated his life to staying clean and sober and helping others in the community stay clean and sober, especially the Black community, the young community, but anybody that is willing to hear his story. So with great respect and pride, I want to introduce you to Jeffrey. Hi, Jeffrey. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Wow. It's so good to see you.
Oh, yeah. In
a free man.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a free man in a physical sense and spiritual sense. You know, it's been a journey, but it's been a journey that's been worthwhile. I'll say that. Been seeing a lot of changes in my life and people in my life and whatnot.
Tell us about you and where you're from and what your life was like when you were born and raised.
Oh, basically, you know, come from a single parent home with my mother, an older sister, a deceased brother now who passed away in 92, and I got a baby brother who's in New York. But basically, our family was a very good family, strong family. We had everything we needed, pretty much born in Oakdale Projects then. It's called Caldwell Homes now, but it was Oakdale way back in the day, and that's where we grew up at. And I can remember we had a good childhood. We played. They had activities for us to do as kids, and it was just a real good childhood. My mother did the best that she could for us, and I believe that she done a really good job. I think things kind of made a turn for me whenever I started getting mischievous, little criminal behavior, deviant behavior, like maybe taking somebody's bottles off the porch or something and taking it back for the refund, things like that, staying out late, you know, getting whoopings and stuff like that.
Just rebellious in your nature, you think?
Pretty much. I just, you know, I even though I had the things that I needed, there was maybe some things I wanted, and I don't think I had the patience. A lot of times I wanted it, you know, then and now, and I did things I'm not, you know, proud of that I did to get those things. Basically, when I look back on it, my problem started with marijuana. Like when I was like 12 years old, I had a paper route, and it was in the Parkside Terrace Apartments when they was just pretty much brand newly built, and I delivered papers, and one time out of the blue, knocked on the door, guy gave me a pill bottle with a marijuana joint in it. And I don't know, from that day, I smoked it right through the hallways, and I was just off and running. And next thing I knew,
you were 12 years old, and somebody that you sold a newspaper to just gave you a joint.
Mm-hmm. And it started from there, and then it's like I had an affair for a very long time with marijuana, and I had to pretty much have that every day.
What is it about marijuana?
No, I think really I look at it, it was the first drug I ever used, so that was the first, I'll say, chemical change I ever had in my life. So it took me out of myself, all the inferior complexes and stuff I might have had. They diminished. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel those feelings that I felt when I really look at it now. I was okay, you know. And
so pot made you feel okay?
Definitely. Definitely that.
That's so important as a teenager, to feel okay. Mm-hmm. So if pot gives you that, yeah, it could be real attractive.
Right, right. And I think basically through high school, that's when once I got to high school, my grades really started dropping because I had a real fixation on getting high on weed, smoking weed. And
every day?
Every day. No doubt, every day. And so I barely made it out of high school, you know, with my grades and stuff, but I did graduate, and I went to the Army, delayed entry program. And in 1983, went straight to the boot camp, and everything was going good. And next thing I knew, I had started smoking weed once I got in Alaska at a permanent party station, and that's when I had a relationship with my father. And they would come and pick me up from the base. They stayed in North Pole, Alaska. They picked me up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and drive me back to their house, real nice house. They was doing well. And
your dad?
My dad, yeah, my father.
Lived in Alaska,
right. It's amazing how that worked out. I was stationed at Fort Wainwright, Alaska, and they stayed in North Pole, Alaska, just like maybe 60 miles north from Fairbanks. And my father and my stepmother pretty much co-signed me getting high, you know, even though my career was in the Army. I had just gotten there, so everything took off real fast for me. But me, my father, and my stepmother, I could sit in the house and get high. I had just turned 18. And I think that's when I can remember, that's when my father came out of the room, and he had this powdery substance on the mirror. And I know the day that, of course, that was cocaine. And I snorted cocaine with him and my stepmother, but
at 18, your dad's giving
you. At 18, and you know the craziest thing is you know, I didn't see anything wrong with it at the time, and the acceptance is what I was looking for, and I felt accepted then. But of course, it turned around and was giving me problems pretty fast because cocaine costs a lot of money.
So you got right into that too.
Yeah. Got right into that, and I lasted for a while, you know, for a little while I did, and...
You mean stayed pretty functional in the service?
Yeah, pretty functional, you know, it wasn't an all-the-time type deal, but towards the end, I'll say like in about 86, 85 is when it got to be like, you know, any kind of monies I had went towards, you know, booze and cocaine. But my problems really turned once a friend of mine, I won't say a friend, I'll say an associate, showed me how to cook cocaine. And once I was shown that and used it that way, everything changed then. You know, it's like my world went upside down.
You mean from, just for the audience perspective, you mean from snorting it? to smoking it?
Right, from snorting it to smoking it.
There was a big difference in the effect?
And this was in, I'll say 85 is when the change came on that. And things went downhill real fast. And I got put out of service in 1986.
Because of drugs?
Because of drugs, failed urine tests. And I'll say by the end, you know, I couldn't hold on to money very well. I got irresponsibility really took over. My first son, he was born by then, and it was just really a mess. And I had to come home because I was devastated by then. Just the fact that I got put out of the service, you know, my first career in my life, you know, just what I thought was
and a son,
right? And a son.
So they didn't offer you any treatment.
They did. They offered me treatment one time, and I went through the little course they had, but I couldn't stay clean. Any urine tests they gave me, I pretty much failed them. And they just got tired of me, you know, and I was rebellious at the same time. I argued with sergeants and stuff, and really rebellious and defiant in my ways. And I think they just was looking at me as somebody who, you know, they couldn't do anything with.
Weren't willing to invest in.
Right.
Do you think, Jeffrey, because you started out with a little bit of a rebellious personality, which is really a good thing to have, but do you think adding marijuana and then cocaine to what was already a rebellious personality was just a license to disaster?
Well, no, yeah, no question. I always look back at, you know, honestly, when I look at myself as a kid, I always look at myself as a skinny kid, you know, and it's amazing how, you know, once I did the drugs and stuff, you know, I felt like, you know, I was this real good-looking guy, you know, and I was this big muscular guy and all this, and so things weren't so bad. But I don't know, it seems like I always was running away from who I really was, you know.
Well, as a teenager and at 20, you're still trying to figure all that out, and you added cocaine and marijuana to the menu.
Right. A lot of confusion.
Yeah. Yeah, and then especially getting kicked out of the service. Right. How did you explain that to yourself or to your family?
Man. I was devastated because I knew that was pretty much the way I looked at it. That was my shot to a career someplace where I wouldn't have to be home and
some stability.
Ask my mom to do this, could she do this, and all this. I could be independent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I lost that or gave it away. Mm-hmm. And once I got back home, that's when things really kind of took off fast, went downhill. I would work jobs and stuff, and, you know, I found myself, you know, I would blow my whole paycheck, and for some reason I couldn't understand how I could blow my whole paycheck. You know, then I would repeat this cycle maybe 2 weeks later, and I would say it's going to be different this time. This went on for years with this thing about me trying to manage this, and there was just no managing of that.
You mean you were trying to
control it?
You know? Still use but have the right externals in place,
right,
externals, to make it look good.
Right, man, it just didn't work. Long story short on that, I mean, I use, period, and, you know, I jacked off a lot of money, you know, and found myself homeless at times, staying in shelters. It got down to that point.
Wow.
I had gotten married and stayed in Owensboro, and, you know, I look back on that, you know, all the stuff that I took her through, and my two younger sons that I had with her, and... you know, of course, we ended up getting divorced, but, you know, it pretty much just devastated my life, you know.
Everybody that loved you.
Right, and everybody that loved me, absolutely correct. And it was a hard, long road because I used for a long time, and I hurt a lot of people. And I look at that now, you know, after the work and stuff I've done, when I got to Wabash, you know, I was able to do a lot of writing and looking back on my history. And I seen that, but basically it took me all the way to the end. Homelessness, being on the streets, you know, staying in abandoned houses. Oh, yeah, you name it. That's where I was at. And I'm talking like 96, 90, 95, those times. That's when it was, I'll say, the worst for me.
Here in Evansville?
Here in Evansville, yeah.
You must have been so embarrassed, especially with a mother that, has such pride and prominence in the community. There you are in shelters and can't even stay clean a day.
Oh, yeah. I went.
Such shame.
Such shame. Mm. What do you mean? Gosh. Oh, yeah. It was a hard road, and I'm just really grateful to be alive.
So this is a good example, community, that even bright, charismatic, good people can end up homeless in an addiction.
No question. I see it all the time, even, you know, being clean right now, even people I knew, that had the cars, you know, that had homes and stuff, mm-hmm. and now, you know, they're riding bicycles, and, and you know, I see it, and it's amazing, you know, when you get on the other side, when you're clean and sober, and, you know, you work for a living, and you pay your bills, and you're responsible, and then you still see, the people you grew up with, and you look and you say, man, you know, by the grace of God, you know, that was me. And, you know, it can still be me at any time.
Absolutely.
I desire to make a selfish decision and to use.
So, Jeffrey, prison's not the worst thing that can happen to somebody. You can lose your manhood. You can lose your home. You can lose the people you love. You can lose your pride, it sounds like. Prison isn't always the worst. People think, oh, prison, Wabash, but really, you were homeless before you even went to prison.
I tell you, the first time I went to prison, when I look back on it, of course, I had some fear before I first went there. But once I got there, my mindset, I was not done. And once I got there, I knew how to get with people who did different little things. Smoking cigarettes when cigarettes was not able to be smoked in prisons, and you know, just that whole thing.
That
and,
culture of deception.
Yeah, right.
You got in that in prison?
Oh, well, you know.
So there are drugs in prison.
Right. You find your guys that are from Evansville, and you know, you all pretty
click
much
off.
Hang, you know, because that's what you do. But I look back because, you know, I've been incarcerated 3 different times, and I look back and, you know, I look at my mindset then. And I know this time when I went to a Wabash, this time in 2007, that's when I knew that I was done. I couldn't win. And
what got you there that time? Drugs? Was it always drugs related to drugs?
Yeah. I was on probation, drug court, and I had relapsed, and they gave me a chance, and I relapsed again, and they sent me off. And, boy, it's like my whole world. You're talking about hurt and shame because I had, you know, maybe a little bit of clean time. And I fell off and I used. But when I went to, when I got sent to Wabash, it just wasn't the same. So I went through the whole spiel. I had to go through the RDC. And it's like the noise was a whole lot louder. Just different things. I can remember being at the prison facility and they made us all stand outside in the heat while they frisked us, and everything was just, it seemed like it was really magnified. And that's when I knew that, you know, this is what's going to happen for the rest of my life. If I don't die, this is what I'm going to be doing over and over again.
That dehumanizing lifestyle.
Yeah, because, you know, I've come up with this. Because
in prison, you're a number, right?
Right?
You're not a person.
You don't do something with your life, there's always somebody that's there to help you, and in the event, you're going to have to pay for that, whether it be monies or with your time. And that's just the way it is. But the kicker for me, if I can say this, is when I was there, my father passed away, and I wasn't able to ask him some of the things I wanted to ask him. God rest his soul. He was a good man. Even though he was the first one to introduce me to that life, he was a really, really good man. And I miss him as of today.
Mm-hmm.
But he passed away, and then that was the reality to me that, you know, people are dying, you know, and we're not promised tomorrow. And the people you love, can you be there for them when they need you? And it dawned on me. And the thing that really got me is when my mother came to that prison facility and she went to that vending machine to get my funky butt a soda and some chips, and I looked at my mother, and I realized that my mother was getting older. And here I was in the same scene, the same set, and here I was. And that's when I said, you know, this has gone on long enough. And I surrendered. I really surrendered. And I knew that, as I was telling you earlier, I can't win. I can't win. When it comes down to drugs and alcohol, I can't win. And that's just the way it was. And everything pretty much worked out the way that it did. But I'm grateful. This has been a really good journey for me. It's been a testing journey. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I've got deep-seated old ways. And
a lot of things have to change to stay clean, don't they?
Yes, they do. I think they say almost everything has got to change.
But I think it's telling that looking at your mother was something that really was a wake-up call for you. That you want to be here for your mother. So you mothers that are listening, don't ever give up. Right? Moms will be
That's
there when...
Truth. Look how long it took me. You know, it took a long time. And I can't sit here and say that I'm there. This is always a journey.
Right.
A journey of a day at a time. You know, we never get there. You know, we just take every day that we get and seize it. And I know myself to stay humble, be grateful for what I have, treat people with respect, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, this is just a gift to have been through this whole journey that I have been through and to be on the other side right here, you know, talking to you, good relationship with a significant other in my life, Kim.
Is that Kim that we were going to meet today and bowed out on us,
right.
Jeff?
She's
afraid I was going to put her on here, probably ask her some questions. So tell us the truth about Jeffrey. So you've turned into the kind of man that you were raised to be and aspired to be, it sounds like. And you're even liking it. You're kind of wearing it well.
It's a journey.
You're making an honest living today. You're not stealing.
Not stealing. Man, imagine
that's
that.
Hard, isn't it? When you know you could have what you make in 1 week, in 1 hour, but you're doing it the right way and the legal way.
It's like now the whole difference, it's like I heard a guy say, you know, now... You know, the consequences are real apparent. You know, this is what's going to happen if I decide to do this. This is what's going to happen. Do you want to go to jail? Do you want to go through the whole spiel of being in front of a judge, taking a ride to the jail, to the courthouse, back and forth, the sack lunches?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Seeing your mom look at you with that sadness again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. What do you think your father would say to you?
You know, my father's already saying things, and I'm a real believer of the ones that pass on, my father, my brother, lots others, my cousins. They're here in spirit, and
I believe
they're
it.
That added strength, because things are a tad bit different for me now, because my thinking is different, you know. And,
but somebody's inspiring you.
No
from...
question.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
Of course, God himself. But,
sure.
You know, also, I think the ones that went on before me.
Our parents are telling us, keep on going.
Keep on going,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, don't go away, Radio Rehab. We've just got to take a break, and then we're going to come back. Don't hesitate to call Jeff and ask some questions if you want. Nothing's below the belt, 424-1400. Give us a call if you have any comments or sharings or questions. We're going to take a little break because Mr. Landers wants to give some of our community sponsors some credit for supporting our show. We'll be right back.
Stuff will make you want to see. Subs, beat, sound, and bounties. Bring all Every Wednesday, the Town Joyner Morning Show grants another Christmas wish.
Please, 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 Mr. Joyner, I keep praying that you see my letter and grant my Christmas wish because I really need it. Tamika, gotcha. Merry Christmas.
The Christmas wish happens every Wednesday morning on the TJMS.
The City of Henderson is hiring firefighters. Requirements: high school diploma or GED. Must be 18 years of age. Must have or be able to obtain a valid driver's license. $31,580.89 per year plus benefits. To apply, applications can be obtained from Human Resources or online at www.cityofhendersonky.org. You may also contact Human Resources at 270-831-1200. Deadline for completed applications is no later than 5 p.m. May 14th, 2010.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
My car needs a sip of some smooth, clean, and refreshing high-quality motor oil, and I'm going to take it to Award-Winning Oil Change. At Award-Winning Oil Change, they take care of all my car's needs. For $20 on most vehicles, the mechanic will change the oil and inspect the car for safety and drivability issues for free. Isn't that awesome? I go there because they are very professional, and they have good service for good people at a great price. It's truly a one-stop shop. They're not the average oil change. They have a team of professional mechanics that take care of my suspension work, brakes, shocks, struts, and tune-ups. And why do I go to Award-Winning Oil Change located across from Deaconess Hospital at the corner of Harriet and Virginia? Pricing. They are the home of the $20 oil change, and that includes a free vehicle inspection. So stop clowning around and follow me to the best place in town, Award-Winning Oil Change, at the corner of Harriet in Virginia, or call them at 424-1992.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Welcome back, everybody. We're interviewing Jeffrey, who has just talked candidly about his addiction and where it took him, and we're going to spend the rest of the time now talking about recovery and some of the things he believes have helped make it possible for him to be in recovery and stay in recovery, and some of the concerns he has that we could push toward in helping our community. So, Jeffrey, you got in recovery on December 30th of 2007. So you're 2.5 years in recovery after 30 years of addiction.
That's right.
Wow. So in 2.5 years of recovery, wow, that's not long to combat 30 years of addictive thinking, huh? But how's it worked for you, the recovery process?
What had to take place, I can only speak for myself, is I hadn't been new to, the rooms of a 12-step program. I had pretty much known about them for years. My whole thing was I didn't want to answer to anybody, another man, or to tell another man my whereabouts and what's going on with me and whatnot. I would go to the meetings, but I would never invest myself into the program, a 12-step program.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I told myself when I was in Wabash, when I got out, they offered me, I was asked, they said, well, you know, we would like for you to finish the drug court program. If that's what you want to do, other than that, you know, we can work something else out. And I thought, well, at first I didn't want to do it, but then I thought, then again I thought, well, you know what? This is something I need to do for myself. I need to complete this. I need to finish it because I didn't leave on a good note. I hadn't finished anything in a long time in my life. So I was like, yes, you know, I'll do that. And I completed that program April the 13th. But anyway, when I got out, I got out February of 2009. And I did 90 meetings in 90 days. I took that suggestion. I got myself a sponsor. And for the first time in my life, you know, I started working some steps. And what became apparent to me was, you know, the second part of the first step, talking about the unmanageability. Because here I was, 40 years old at the time and 42 years old at the time. And you know, could I really admit that my life was unmanageable, even not using any drugs, just in life, period, you know? And I think that's when the light came on that I had never done that. Oh, yeah, I knew I had a problem with drugs and alcohol. Yeah, no doubt about that. But once I put the stuff down, did I still understand that I needed some help with some men in my life and some people to surround me to help me to learn how to live. See, that was it, you know. Could I admit that I needed help to learn how to live? Because I can remember my mother saying to me years ago, she's like, Jeff, you know, you've never really paid rent or anything. do you think that you're going to be able to do that? She said this years ago, and you know what? I used to get so mad when she said that. But now I look at it, it was just the truth.
Unmanageable. And she knew it.
She knew it. But you couldn't tell me that.
All that pride, false pride.
Yes. I always thought, and I say it in meetings all the time because I know some people's got to be thinking like this. I always thought the only thing I needed to do when I got out of prison was to get myself a job, eventually get myself an apartment, maybe get a girlfriend or something, and I'd be just fine. Mm-hmm. That's the thinking I always had. But this time I knew that, you know, it just wasn't that simple. There was things I had to do.
And you think the 12-step programs address that more than, like, let's say going to church would? Or
church was great for me, but you know, a church service lasts for an hour. You know, I might do some Bible study and whatnot, but I had to do some things that would allow me to love myself enough where to use drugs and alcohol would just be totally unacceptable. I had to get to that point in life because as the days came and they went, there was choices that had to be made, and I had to be empowered. Mm-hmm. And
by other recovering people.
Right. And that's what they gave me, and that's what my sponsor gave me. He took me through the steps. We went to Barnes & Noble and sat in there and went over, you know, these steps and stuff, and we talked, and then that's when I had an understanding of how the disease works and how more than anything my thinking works. And I knew then and there I had to be honest. I couldn't be sleeping around with different women. I couldn't be stealing. And see, back then, I say 3 years ago, I didn't find anything wrong with that.
As long as you weren't using, you could still live that life.
Right. That was the delusion that I was in,
right,
in so-called recovery. And I guess this is the reason why I'm still going a day at a time today, is because those things did change. But more than anything, my thinking did change. My thinking had to change. I remember a guy a long time ago, I never forget, I was at this place in Terre Haute. It was a recovery house. And the only thing I can remember is this guy coming from the outside, and he sat in there and he looked at us and he said, you know what, if I sat around long enough and thought about getting high as long as y'all did, I would be high too.
Yeah.
And I thought he was just arrogant for saying that, but now I know what he means.
Yeah.
I can't sit around and just think about getting high and glamorize that, because yes, eventually I will use.
Yes.
So my thinking has definitely got to change.
So that's a key to recovery.
No question.
Even just going into a meeting means your thinking changed, because a lot of people think, oh, I'll just, you know, go see my doctor, or I'll go to church, or I'll just, they don't want to go to those meetings. But you're right, the meetings is what helps foster that changed thinking.
No question.
So, go ahead.
I tell you what, I can remember this one guy, he came to a meeting, and it still gets my attention. He says, I don't know why, but, you know, I could come in here after having a long day's work, and I could be tired, and something could be on my mind. And he says, you know, where does the suffering go, man? It's like it just gets absorbed with the people in the rooms, with all the sharing
and
stuff, you know.
That's cool. That's true.
Instead of looking for the differences, I look for the things, the similarities.
Yes.
I used to get caught up when I go to meetings, you know, I don't see enough brown people, I don't see enough black people. Why am I the only black person in these meetings? See, and I feel like, you know, oh, you know, they don't want to stick their hand out to me, or you know, they just hug whoever they know. Mm-hmm. See, I went through that whole spiel.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it seemed like I was the only black person at certain meetings, but then I was, you know, it became apparent to me that, what do you go for, Jeff? You know, what's the main purpose of you going to these meetings? And it was to stay alive. And I knew that no matter what color that you were, the whole purpose of any of us being there was to stay alive another day. Because you know what? No matter what color the skin was, they was just like me. They felt
That's
like
right.
me. They thought like me. And they had dreams and aspirations just like me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can identify. You know, can I identify? Yes, I can.
You know, I've learned so much in doing this show, and there have been so many people that have come on and said what you just said. They had to go in and be colorblind almost, because they couldn't go in and think I'm different. In order to stay clean and change their life, they really had to join. And not
uniqueness is what killed me anyway, you know, almost.
So what do you think we need to do to do better, to join forces with the people that love us in the community, even if they don't understand us? What do you think we need to do to make it accessible to people? Or
as far as myself, I'm gonna tell you where I work at.
yeah,
you know, where I work at, plenty of my people come in there, and there are people that I haven't seen in years, and they know my history, they know my past. They know that I was out there gone, and for them to see me and see me still on the path, on the path now, I think that does more good than anything. I don't force myself on people, even though I know they're using. I seen one today. I seen 3-4 today come in the store, you know, and they get them some food, and I know they're using, but, you know, that's a choice that they make, but they're always glad to see me. Always.
Yes.
I give them a hug and they say, good to see you, you know, and they know.
They know you're clean.
They know I'm clean, you know. And
you're right. That's probably the best message. Oh, somebody's calling. That's the best message. People know you're a changed man. Hello.
Yes, good morning. This is Etta, and I just wanted to ask Jeff a question.
Hi, Etta.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. How about you?
I'm doing really great. And sitting here listening to the radio show is very interesting.
Isn't Jeff great?
Yes, he really is. He's doing an excellent job.
Yes. Go ahead with your question. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to know, Jeff, when exactly, you know, for yourself, that the actual light really went off for you, that you just had to change your life and you wanted to be clean and sober? When did the willingness come into play?
Great question.
Yeah, that is a good question. Thanks, Anna. And how you doing, too? The willingness came in with me is when I got out, because I know I had tried everything that I could on my own, and it just wasn't working. The willingness came in is when I got out of myself, and I realized that, to be honest with you, could I be there for my mother in a time of need? I always thought about that. Could I be there for my sons if they ever came to look for me? What kind of shape would I be in? I knew I wasn't going to have no life if I wasn't willing to do some kind of work, some kind of writing.
I know exactly what you mean. Well, that's really great, because I know, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of us come in, we come into those rooms and, you know, we sit there, but, you know, we still want to be into our own thinking and we still want to do our own thing instead of actually taking a suggestion that's being offered to us when we're in there, you know. And the only way that we're going to change is to do the work and to take the suggestion and come to meetings and, you know, read the big book and pray, and all the things that are suggested in the program is what we have to do to stay clean and sober on a daily basis.
You're right.
Etta, did you hear what Jeffrey said about getting that unmanageability part, too, in step
one? Oh,
yes,
I did. That was really great, yeah. You know, because we still, just because we put the alcohol and the drugs down don't necessarily mean that our life is still manageable. If we're still having those same old behaviors and doing the same things we did in our addiction, then, you know, eventually we're going to go back to that same old world and that same old life, you know. So it has to be a complete change.
Yep.
You know, the thinking, the behaviors have to change, and we have to have that open-mindedness. We have to have that honesty and that willingness in our lives to be able to do it on a daily basis.
That's right, Etta.
She's got it, huh?
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Etta's good people.
Yes, her and Robert. So do you guys have to change your friends, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, definitely. I know I did. I had to change everything in my life. I had to change the people, places, and things. And that's one of the main things that they give us suggestions to, is to change the people, places, and things once we're in recovery.
Well, what if it's in your family? Your own family's drinking or drugging. How do you
change? That actually goes for family members as well. It doesn't matter who it is. Whoever it is, if they can't support you in your recovery and they bring the alcohol and the drugs around you, you still have to eliminate them as well. I mean, fortunately, that's just the way it is. Because, you know, it's about your life. It's about a life or death situation for yourself. You know, you can't worry about your family members. You can't worry about anybody but you, because you're the one that has to do the work, and you're the one that wants to stay clean and sober. So,
yeah.
I mean, family members is included as well.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that one right there. Fortunately, I really don't have to go through that. I had one instance, you know, since I've been out where something just came out of blue. I went to a regular family function. It was a birthday. There was no alcohol around at all. And next thing I know, a cooler top popped open and a bottle of Hennessy came out and some beer. And everybody started doing their thing, and I knew it was time for me to go. And I got up and I left. That's just the way it is. I mean, I do what I have to do to stay clean. I don't have any time to be around people. Mm-hmm. There are certain conversations I won't even allow myself to be around.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people I won't allow myself to talk to, even if they just passing by, just going about my business, because it's that serious for me. Because words are seeds, and you can let conversations get in your head. Next thing you know, you'll know where the dope house is at down the street. You really didn't need to know about that. So it manifests itself in many ways.
Mm. So you got to have the willingness to change,
no question.
You guys said, every single thing, even the people you associate with, even if it's in your family, you have to be willing to stay away.
Yeah, you know, disease is it makes its way through lots of people, different situations and places and things. It really does.
So do you guys, you and Etta especially, think that since the prisons are 50%, at least 50%, a diversified population, that we need to do more in the prisons?
I tell you what, prisons are, it's what you make it. I mean, I can't sit here and say there are not things you can do to get yourself on a different path, because there is. One thing about it, if you got the time, you can utilize that time to read different books. You can educate yourself and take
courses. Is that what you did?
Yeah, of course, I read. I think what really got me on the path this time was the substance abuse course. It was a 9-month course there, and I had to do a lot of writing.
About your substance abuse and your criminal mind?
About my whole life. And one of the focuses that it focused on was my childhood, you know, and what I realized, I think I might have shared earlier in the show, is I was a criminal deviant before I even used drugs. And I never really even thought about that. So all this stuff just was like stepping stones on into a full-blown addiction. In order to commit crimes and stuff, it came so naturally. And of course, you know, the prison sentences came so naturally too, because of the consequences. But that was my path. And like I said, I got out and I done those 90 meetings in 90 days. Done that, I had to report to and see the people at the jail at drug court. I stayed the path. You know, I caught the bus every day. Then it turned into every other day. I went to work. I was faithful. I showed up because
You were responsible.
Yeah, I was responsible.
You caught the bus, so you didn't have a license?
just to understand, I get my license May 14th after about 15 years.
No kidding. You haven't had a license for 15 years? So it can be done.
Yeah, it can be done. It's just, they always told me to try. I had to trust the process, man. Trust this process. But there were some goals that I had to make out. It made it that much more attainable. It made it that much more fulfilling to have goals, 6 months goals, 3 month goal, a year goal, 2 year goal, 5 year goal.
Just break it down in increments.
And I was checking them off as I was going on. And my counselor, Todd, at the time, you know, I tell him, I say, you need to pull that list out, you know, because, you know, I got another goal completed. But see, I had to, you know, to be honest with you, I was just a newborn person, and that's just what I was. I was just a new creature. And, you know, old things passed away. Behold, it said, behold, all things are become new. And that's just what's happened in my life. You know, I'm just like, I don't mind saying I'm just like a little kid.
Just
I'm
newborn.
Yes. You know, and my girlfriend Kim, she says all the time.
Kim, who didn't show up today?
Oh, yeah, Kim doesn't show up today. She says all the time. She says you're just like sometimes you're just like a teenager.
Awesome.
I say, hey, I can't help it. You know,
that's
life
right.
Life is really.
Well, you started using as a teenager, so of course, emotionally, you're still
right.
A teenager.
See,
in a lot
that's hard to swallow.
It is.
And a lot of people do not want to.
Accept
that,
yeah.
It
embarrasses them.
But to say that, and it keeps you from getting well.
Is it because it's embarrassing?
Yeah, because you want to be a man right now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have it going on right now. You know, I don't want to tell you about that part of my life, see. But see, those things almost have to be done in order to accept that bottom, and then you can just move on up.
So Jeffrey, and I don't know if Ed is still on, you think a lot of the struggles and obstacles of getting into this thing is that people do not want to really tell anybody what's happened to them. We want to live in secrecy. We're embarrassed.
Like that saying says, who wants to admit complete defeat?
Right.
Who wants to tell anybody about them things that you did?
That are ugly.
Yeah,
ugly in our past.
To light that you got shoved down for many years.
Yeah.
Know? But, you know, like this pastor says in a book, and I'm not going to say which book it is, but it says, who wishes to do all them things? Who wishes to talk to another person? You know, who wishes to do an inventory, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
They say he will do these things if he
the leveling of our pride.
Stay alive himself. He'll do those things.
And you think that's the main deal, don't you? The ticket to this thing is, first of all, the willingness. But you mentioned earlier, too, the acceptance.
Oh, definitely. Number one for me was acceptance of the person I have become, what it did to me, where I was at in life, this is where I'm at. I really don't know too much of anything right now.
That's hard to swallow.
Can you show me how to get there? And they did. They showed me how to get there, and I keep on pressing towards the mark. Yes, that's what I do. It's a day at a time thing. I think that's one of the greatest sayings I ever heard in a program was one day at a time.
Yep.
You know, get on my knees in the morning and say, I just want to be good to people. Lord, can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you help me just be good to people? Can you help to appreciate what I have right now? And then y'all going out in that world because choices and decisions got to be made. I'm going to see people. I'm not going to be in no AA meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be out there.
In the world.
Yeah. Can I hold it down? You know,
can
I carry the message in my life? Man, that's where it's at my job.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What a great place for you to carry the message. It's your job. You see everyone there.
I see everyone.
Don't you have a lot of young people working for you?
Yes, I do.
Oh, and you must hear a lot about their weekends. And...
Oh, boy. Matter of fact, one didn't show up today.
So you got to go back to work? You have to go back?
No.
Or
I'm
you got it covered?
I do my thing early in the morning, 4 to 12. Yes.
So you're a leader today. Where do you want to take this recovery now? I mean, I know you. I don't mean that any moving mountains, but is there something or some place or some area or corner of the world that you would like to see yourself get involved in to help?
Definitely with the younger men that's incarcerated. I got a friend of mine. I just ran into him. And he's heavily into that. So I know God is leading me. I know He's placing people in my life. You know, like they say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
And yes.
I'm finding that to be true. Doors are opening. I'm just real grateful. My life is good. It's really.
And you've got an awesome mother.
Oh boy, yeah.
So I'm sure Kim's pretty awesome too.
Oh boy, the bomb!
I can't imagine you being with anybody that's not just incredibly awesome. You probably have an awesome sponsor. So where can people find you? In the rooms.
Right, in the rooms.
And what church?
Well, most times I go to Memorial.
Memorial Baptist. Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I go to Memorial. Sometimes I might want to go to New Hope. It's all cool. Depending on the way I want to hear it.
The way you are that day.
The way I am, you know. And also I want to go to Nazarene. You know, there's three main churches I affiliate with. I'm just going to say it. That's just the
sure.
way it is.
That's
you know,
great.
I don't have a solid church home, but
it's in you. Right. See, that's in you, not where you go so much, isn't it? You have that spiritual faith in
right.
you today. Yes. Wherever you go, N.A., Nazarene, Memorial.
Okay.
Jeff's got gratitude. Well, you certainly look different today than you did a few years ago in Wabash Prison.
Wow.
Wow.
And before we get off, I remember when you stepped up in there and the whole facility just froze and looked. Like, who is that white woman in here with those official clothes on? And why does she want to talk to you?
Uh-oh.
You know, are you telling on somebody or something?
Narkin.
I must be talking like, yeah, I'm just like, man, whatever, you know.
They thought, who is that curly-headed white chick coming in with the radio?
But that was then, and this is now, and it's been, I appreciate you having me on the show.
I'd love for you to come back periodically and definitely help us maybe get on the committee with your mom and follow that passion of yours to get to young people to help them if they can avoid them going to prison, or if they are in prison, you help them avoid going back to prison.
Yeah.
What an order.
What an order.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any other last words, Jeff? Wow, I know your dad would be proud of you, and all the people that loved you and touched you would be very proud of you today. You got to keep hanging out in those rooms to hold on to this thing, that's
yeah.
for sure.
I would just like to, before I get off, just to thank, of course, my mother, Kim, all the guys in the rooms of recovery that's helped me, that's talked to me on my phone, my sponsor. They've been there for me. I even had a lady by the name of Mary Kay at the Goodwill. I got to give a shout out to her because I had to see her every month. And it got to be to the point where I was looking forward to seeing her because she brought another dynamic
yes.
To what I needed to hear mm-hmm. in life. And she helped move me on. I looked at her, I was like, you know what? It's been over a year since I seen you. And I said, it's almost time for me to leave you, ain't it? She said, yeah. She said, we all just here to just help move you along. Just
mm-hmm.
move you along. And it was apparent to me, you know, that, I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If anybody wants to hear Jeffrey on the World Wide Web, you can go to www.lisaseifcares.net and then hit podcast, and you'll be able to hear his interview then and a lot of the other radio rehab interviews, even his mother's interview. So go to www.lisaseifcares.net, hit podcast, and you'll get to hear Jeffrey on the World Wide Web. Any comments, concerns, you can email us at radiorehab@yahoo.com, Radio Rehab on Facebook. Call us here at WEOA. Ask Allison or Mr. Landers to get a message to us, and we will be sure to answer to your request. Jeff, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And we will have Jeffrey back periodically for sure. Until next week, you guys, don't forget to do the next right thing.
Bye-bye.